Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, classic comedy. Later on, we hear the earliest surviving broadcast of The Candid Microphone from 1947. But right now, it's the Jell-O program starring Jack Benny, an NBC Red Network broadcast from February 5th, 1939, with Eddie Anderson, Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, and his orchestra, and singer Kenny Baker.
J-E-L-L-O!
The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Kenny Baker, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Just One of Those Things. One of those things played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we bring you... Oh, just a moment, folks. Mary, where's Jack?
He'll be right in. He's in the next room sending a telegram.
Oh, he's been in there 10 minutes. What's it all about?
I don't know. Jack said it was none of my business, so let's open the door and listen.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, Mary. It isn't cricket.
We're not in England now. Open it up, Mary.
Okay. Gee, he looks mad.
Operator, will you please pay attention? I asked for Western Union, and you gave me the Plumber's Union 3 times.
I did?
Yes, I'm not a plumber. I don't know a plunger from a trombone. Now, will you please get me Western Union?
All right, handsome.
Handsome? Well, you can't even see my face.
Well, I can dream, can't I?
That's all you've been doing. Now, will you please make it snappy?
Just a moment, I'll let you talk to information.
Look, I don't want to talk to information.
For goodness sake, you can talk to the girl. You don't have to marry her.
Look, miss, I'm in a hurry. Will you please get me Western Union?
Okay.
See, that guy fights with everybody.
Especially on telephone.
Quiet, you two.
Here's your party.
It's about time. Hello?
Western Meat Market. What's your order, please?
I'd like a pound... Hey, wait a minute. I've got the wrong number. Operator.
Number, please.
Look, operator, this is Old Faithful talking. Now, if it's all right with you, I'd like to send a telegram.
Oh, you want Western Union.
Yes, and congratulations. This is the longest conversation since Cohen on the telephone. Now, look, operator, it's the last time I'm going to...
Hello, this is Western Union.
What?
This is Western Union.
Well, for heaven's sake, it's sure good to hear your voice. How are you?
Oh, hello, Joe. When did you get in town?
I'm sorry, miss, but I'm not Joe. Look, I want to send a wire to Fred Allen, New York City.
Oh, so that's the big mystery.
This ought to be good.
You get the name, miss? Fred Allen.
Allen, how do you spell it?
A is an anteater, L is in liar, another L is in leech, E-N. Now, here's the message. Dear Mr. Allen, heard your program again last Wednesday, and this is your final warning.
Oh, did you hear him, too? I thought I'd die when he said Jack Benny was a male impersonator.
That's very funny. Now, take my message.
Yes,
sir. Mr. Allen, if you ever mention the name of Jack Benny again, the undersigned will personally come to New York and kick your new but unpaid-for teeth out. Have you got that?
Yeah.
Good. Sign it, The Clutching Hand. How much is that? Straight message.
Just a moment, please.
The Clutching Hand? Where did Jack get that name?
Oh, you know his rheumatism.
Quiet. Let's go back.
How much is it, miss? I haven't got all day.
That'll be $2.46 for a straight message.
Fine. Send it collect.
Thank you, Mr. Hand. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, that's that. Al'll never guess who sent that wire, and he'll be plenty scared. Oh, now what? Hello?
Hello, I got Western Union for you.
I just talked to Western Union. Young lady, how do you keep your job anyway?
Well, right now, I'm sitting on the boss's lap.
Oh. 800 telephone operators in this city, and I had to get her. Sorry I'm late, Don. You can introduce me now.
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that suave comedian, that sophisticated humorist, that clutching hand, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Greetings, hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. Clutching Hand. Don, what's the matter with this gang anyway? Can't I even make a telephone call without everybody eavesdropping?
Well, Jack, it really wasn't my idea.
Oh, it wasn't?
No, I thought of it. You know me. I'm just a spy at heart.
Oh, you are? Well, listen, Matta Harris. I think spying is about as low a trick as any human being can possibly do.
You're right, Jack.
Certainly I'm right. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Clutch.
Oh, you too, huh? Well, if you want to know something, Mary, you're nothing but a little snoop.
Well, at least I never sign a fake name to a telegram.
Yeah, where did you get that Clutching Hand stuff?
Bill, it so happens that was my nickname when I was a kid. Everybody used to call me Clutching Hand Benny.
Why?
Because I never had a belt for my pants. That's why. Are you satisfied?
Well, I got the impression you were trying to scare Fred Allen. Did you hear him Wednesday night?
Yes, I heard him. Every week I get the same question.
Well, I tuned in last Wednesday and I thought he was exceptionally amusing.
Amusing? Don, I've listened to seashells that were more entertaining than Alan. And another thing, to hear Alan talk, you'd think I was a weakling and a coward.
That's right, the Daily Double.
Quiet.
And you know, Jack, there isn't a week goes by that Alan doesn't mention how tight you are.
He says I'm tight. He's a fine one to talk. Any man that'll tar and feather his straw hat so he can wear it in the wintertime. Well.
No kidding, Jack. Is he really that stingy?
Stingy? You want to hear something, Don? I went over to his house one day and caught him painting cheese on mousetraps. Isn't that awful, Mary? Starving a poor little mouse.
Well, I never saw a fat one in your house.
Is that so? I've got several with double chins. Anyway, let's drop, Alan, and talk about something a little more pleasant.
Well, speaking of something pleasant, I have some good news for you, Jack.
You have? What is it, Don?
Well, Phil tells me he's not going to leave our program after all.
Really? Why, Phil, what caused this sudden change in your plans?
Well, Jack, I thought the whole thing over. And after all, you've always been a regular guy with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a pretty sweet fellow to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And besides that, I had a little trouble with my sponsor.
Oh, I thought it was something like that. What happened between you and the Bubblegum King there?
Well, just as we were signing a contract where I was to direct the 90-piece symphony orchestra, they threw a net over him.
Oh. I thought there was something crazy about that guy. Gee, Phil, didn't you suspect anything?
Well, no, I thought he was all right until one afternoon we'd just finished a rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And the sponsor said to me, "Can I take you home? I got my elephant waiting outside."
An elephant? He must have been batty. Say, Mary, you had lunch with him a couple of times. Didn't you notice he was nuts?
I'll say. He used to order fruitcake and laugh at us.
Well, Phil, all I can say is I hope you've learned a lesson and be satisfied to work for a nice fellow like me. Oh, hello, Kenny.
Hiya, Jack. Say, Jack, you want to hear something funny?
What is it, Kenny?
I was in the restaurant across the street a few minutes ago, and you know they got a new waitress there.
Yeah?
So I ordered a cup of coffee, and then I got to talking to her.
Uh-huh.
And I finally made a date to take her out tonight. Oh, boy!
Well, what are you laughing at?
Boy, is she homely!
You certainly pick 'em, Kenny, so you dated her up, eh?
Yeah. And you know what her name is?
What?
Bucktooth Annie.
That's fine. Can you imagine that? Mary's going out with a girl that has buck teeth.
Well, he's got to hang his hat someplace, don't he?
That's right. Well, Kenny, now that you're all excited about your date, have you got a good song for us tonight?
Oh, sure, I got a pip.
Well, that's swell. Let's have it.
Okay. Oh, say, Jack, not changing the subject, but did you hear F.A. last Wednesday night?
Yes, I heard F.A., and I thought he was L.Z. Now, let's not bring that up again.
Well, gee, didn't you laugh when he said your arm looks like a buggy whip with fingers?
My arm looks like a buggy whip, eh? Well, he ought to know.
What do you mean, he ought to know?
Don, when you're riding behind a horse and you take the buggy whip in your hand and hit something, well, he ought to know. And now, Kenny, if you're ready, you may go ahead with your song. Wait a minute. Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
Right here, boy.
It's collect.
Okay.
Wait a minute, Mary. Don't touch it. That's from Fred Allen. Send it back, buddy. I refuse to accept it.
Well, I refuse to be surprised. Goodbye.
Well, Allen isn't going to catch me napping. Sing, Kenny. Imagine trying to hook me for a collect telegram.
Please call out of your dream. Come out of it and come into my arms. Castles in the air will never get you anywhere, and there's a sad little boy beside you waiting to hear that you care. While the moonlight is bright, get into it, make the most of its light. Tell me with a kiss that you're as thrilling as you seem. Oh, please come out of your dream. You're standing so near me, and yet you seem a million miles away. Are you too far to hear me when my heart has so much to say? While the moonlight is bright, get into it, make the most of its light. Tell me with a kiss that you're as thrilling as you seem. Please come out of your dream, my love.
That was Please Come Out of Your Dream, sung by Kenny Baker, who never will. That was really beautiful, Kenny. Gee, some night I wish you'd sing 5 or 6 numbers on our program.
I better get 5 or 6 checks, too.
All right, Kenny, I was just paying you a compliment. What a gang. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight...
Some compliment.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to present our version of Paramount's famous Chinese picture, Hop Along Cassidy. Now, I will play Hop... Mary will be Lung, and Kenny will... Pardon me, folks. Come in. Oh, it's you. Hello, Aubrey.
Hiya, Chief. Everything's okay outside. How's it going in here?
Oh, everything is fine, Aubrey. Just keep your eyes open, that's all.
I got you, Chief. Ready to go home now?
In a little while. Oh, fellas, this is my bodyguard, Aubrey Mulligan.
Your bodyguard?
Yes, I just hired him today.
My goodness, Jack, what do you need a bodyguard for?
Somebody's got to help him find his glasses.
That's not the only reason, Mary. I figured that Alan might send some thugs out here to get me, and I want to be ready.
Thugs, eh? Then you're not scared of Alan personally, is that it?
Listen, Phil, why should I be scared of a fella who's so frail that he has fainting spells at least 3 times a week?
Fainting spells?
Yes. You know how Alan talks through his nose. You think that's adenoids, don't you?
It is adenoids.
It is not. That obstruction in his nose is built in smelling salts. So the only reason I got Aubrey is for protection against Alan's henchmen. Aubrey, sit down here and wait till the program is over.
Okay. Hey, Chief, how about giving me a knockdown at the dame?
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is Mary Livingston.
Hiya, babe. What you doing tonight?
Nothing. You want to shoot some pool?
Mary, that isn't nice. Now, Aubrey, besides being a bodyguard, there are a couple of more things I want you to do for me, and they're very important. Oh, by the way, can you read?
In a pinch, Chief. In a pinch.
Well, wait a minute. I got to find out right now. Oh, Don, give him that piece of paper you got there, will you?
Okay.
Go ahead. Read it, Aubrey.
The whole thing?
Yeah, the whole thing. Go ahead.
Okay. It says here, Ladies and gentlemen, the next time you're in a mood for a delicious and temptating dessert, why don't you go to your nearest grocer?
Pardon me, Aubrey. That's not temptating. It's tempting.
Yes, yes.
Okay, tempting. And ask them for a package of Jell-O. It ain't only easy to make, but it's economical as well.
Economical?
That's not economical. It's economical.
Stop butting in or I'll lay one on you.
Now, Aubrey, control yourself.
Okay, Chief. It ain't only easy to make, but it's economical. You want to make something out of it?
Aubrey, please, please.
It comes in six delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime.
It's lime. But it was pretty good, Aubrey. Now, just stay around till after the program, and you can take me home. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as I started to announce before, tonight we are going to present... Pardon me, I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester talking.
Oh, what do you want?
The telegram just came to the house for you. $8.80 collect.
Well, don't accept it. That wire's from Fred Allen. He sent it to me for a gag.
Well, he must be laughing now. I paid for it.
Paid for? Where did you get $8.80?
I ripped open the mattress and dipped into your reserve fund.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, stay away from there. Incidentally, I've been missing a lot of bills lately, so I wish you'd stop making my bed with a vacuum cleaner. Now, keep the telegram. I'll read it when I get home.
Okay.
Oh, now hop in the car and pick me up. I'll be ready in about 15 minutes.
I ain't going near that car, boss.
Why? What's the matter with it now?
Well, every time I step on the starter, the headlights change places.
Oh, are they doing that again? Well, what happens when you use the crank?
Coffee comes out.
Now, that's just a big lie. Well, never mind. I'll take a cab home.
Okay. So long, boss.
So long.
Oh, say, boss, I think you better come home right away.
Why? Is there anything wrong?
Well, there's a man been prowling around the house all day, and now he's in the backyard.
In the backyard? Oh, I get it. I'll be right home, Rochester. In the meantime, do something to keep that man there.
Shall I throw him some silverware?
No! I'll see you in a little while. Say, fellas, I'm going to run along now. Rochester, tell me there's someone prowling around my backyard.
I bet Alan's got something to do with it.
That's what I think. Come on, Aubrey, here's your chance.
Okay, Chief.
Wait a minute, Jack, I'm going with you.
Nothing doing, Mary. There might be some rough stuff, and you're liable to get hurt.
Go on, I can run as fast as you can.
Well, all right, come on. Let's go, Aubrey.
Follow me, Chief. I'll take you home in my car.
Okay, come on, Mary. Gee, Aubrey, all in from this walking. It was a fine place for your car to run out of gas.
I'm sorry, Chief.
Yeah, are you sure you ran out of gas, Aubrey? See, the gauge said full.
I said I was out of gas, didn't I?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
When you're out of gas, you're out of gas.
I know, but I wanted to get home in a hurry.
Oh, Jack, we've only got five more blocks.
Five more blocks? My feet are killing me. Say, Aubrey, why are we walking down such a dark street? See, the main boulevard is only two blocks away.
It's more romantic here.
Oh. Well, anyway, it's a beautiful night, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, say, Aubrey, I just happened to think I forgot to ask you for references.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Are you worried, Jack?
No, I'm not worried. I'm just tired.
Say, Jack, get a load of that tough-looking guy coming towards us.
Where? Oh, yes.
Hello, Mulligan.
Well, as I live and breathe, if it ain't the doctor.
Doctor?
Say, Chief, I'd like to have you meet a friend of mine, Dr. Thorndyke.
Oh, glad to know you, Doctor. This is Mary Livingston.
Pleased to meet you.
How do you do?
Funny-looking doctor.
Are yous going our way, Doc?
Yeah, I find the night air most beneficial and soothing. So I might as well walk along with you guys.
Do you mind, Chief?
No. Come right along, Dr. Thorndyke. Well, yes, sir.
Do you live in this neighborhood, Doctor?
I ain't talking, buddy.
Oh. Well, what kind of a doctor are you?
He's a swell sergeant.
A sergeant?
Yeah, what's the matter? Don't you like it?
Oh, yeah. Some of my best friends are sergeants.
Say, Jack, I don't think he's a doctor at all. Look at that bulge in his coat pocket.
Oh, that's just his handkerchief.
Well, it's got a trigger on it.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, this walk is very invigorating, isn't it?
It sure is.
Oh, Jack, here comes another guy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, if it ain't Aubrey Mulligan and Doc Thorndike.
Hello, Professor Kingsley.
Professor?
Kingsley, yes.
Well, ain't this a coincidence? Oh, Professor, this is Jack Benny.
How do you do, Professor?
Hiya, buddy. Who's your skirt?
Just call me Levy the Lug.
Nary. Well, fellas, I hate to be rude, but I think I'll run ahead. I'm quite anxious to get home.
No, you don't, Chief.
Hmm.
Hey, Professor, you want to take a walk with us?
Sure. I find the night air most beneficial in shooting, so I might as well walk along with you guys.
Well, beautiful evening, isn't it, Professor Kingsley? Huh?
Yes, and nuts.
That's good. Huh?
Say, Jack, get a load of the professor's cauliflower ears.
Well, maybe he teaches boxing. Who knows? Huh? Well, Aubrey, another couple of blocks and we'll be home. Safe and sound, huh, Aubrey?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Do you think it's dark enough here, Professor?
Well, what do you think, Doctor?
I think it's okay.
Gee, it's swell, this night air, so beneficial and soothing. Isn't it, fellas?
Yeah. All right, buddy, stick them up.
What?
You heard me, up with your hands.
Why, Aubrey!
You can run along now, lady, and if you open your trap to anybody, we'll bump this here guy off.
Yeah, don't talk.
Okay. So long, fellas. Goodbye, Jack. I'll see you tomorrow if I don't talk.
All right, boys. All right, you put one over on me. All right, here's my dough. Now, leave me alone.
Hey, that's a beautiful watch, ain't it, Aubrey?
Yeah. You take it, Doctor. I forgot to send you something for Christmas.
Sentimental, fellas, anyway.
Shut up!
All right, boys. All right, you got my money and watch. Now, please, let me go.
Oh, no, we ain't taking no chances. Off with your pants.
My pants? Gee whiz, fellas, we're in Beverly Hills.
Grab hold of them, Doc. We'll rip them off.
Okay, come on.
Come on, fellas. Oh, my goodness, what's the matter with you guys?
Hey, fellas, get a load of them four legs.
Yeah. Darn you, I'm going to report you guys to the police.
Yeah, do that little thing. Come on, let's scram, fellas. So long, Chief.
Aubrey Mulligan, you're fired. It's a fine thing. Be out in the street here in my BVDs. Oh, well, I've only got another block to go, so I'll run home. Gee, I'm so embarrassed.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Barbara. Oh, my goodness, of all times to meet Barbara Stanwyck. Oh, Rochester! Rochester, open the door! The last number of the 19th program in the new Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity of thanking all of my listeners, as well as the radio editors and critics throughout the United States and Canada, for the lovely tribute they paid the Jell-O program, members of my cast, and myself in the recent polls conducted by the New York World Telegram and the Radio Daily. So thanks again, folks, and good night.
Kenny Baker appears on the Jell-O program through courtesy of Mervyn LeRoy Productions.
Jack Benny on Tuned to Yesterday from February 5th, 1939 on the NBC Red Network. Jack Benny in that episode throwing down the gauntlet to fellow radio comedian Fred Allen to have a fight, and it actually was staged by the J. Walter Thompson Agency, where they put up their dukes, which transformed into a handshake in front of hundreds of onlookers and a publicity stunt that really worked well for the both of them. It's an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now stunts for this next half hour from The Candid Microphone, the earliest surviving show of the series, which began on June 28, 1947. This is from July 13th of that year, hosted and produced by Alan Funt.
The American Broadcasting Company presents The Candid Microphone,
the program that brings you the secretly recorded conversations and reactions of all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. No one ever knows when he's talking into the candid microphone.
Just how funny is a practical joke? Those silly little tricks like exploding cigarettes, collapsible chairs, and knives with hinges in the middle. Do they serve any useful purpose in this already hectic life? The clown who uses them, of course, will get some kind of satisfaction out of watching his victim squirm. But what about the victim? The candid microphone decided to indulge in one of the less injurious variety to see how a victim reacted. We connived with the bartender to set up our recorder under his bar, and then with the microphone concealed in a basket of pretzels, we ordered a drink and waited for somebody to come along. Pretty soon, a lone man sat down beside us. He was an immaculate fellow, crisp-looking, even on this sticky day. Perhaps not the ideal subject for a practical joke, but maybe he would be friendlier than he looked. We fingered the exploding cigarette that we were going to offer him and struck up a conversation that was recorded as follows.
Fella, you bought the last drink. How about letting me buy one for you now?
All right, fine. I'd like another one.
You drinking bourbon?
Bourbon, yeah, please. Yeah.
Plain soda?
No, I'd like, a can of dry soda. I like that quite a bit.
Well, fine.
Incidentally, what sort of soda do you use when you,
I was using just plain, sparkling water of any kind. How about a cigarette?
Yeah, I believe I will.
Good. Need a light?
Yeah, all right, very well. Thank you.
There we go. Oh, boy, these sticky days. I notice you can keep that collar from wilting. How in the devil do you manage to do that? Look, my collars will just fade away and get to nothing in no time.
Well, I don't know. It's true you have to change it once in a while, but it's a neckband shirt, you know.
Look at how fresh it looks. I can never keep in that way for 2 hours.
You're not very comfortable, I'll tell you that, though, sometimes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Why, too stiff on
your
neck?
Yeah, a little stiff. I have
the water. Yeah. Oh, it's murder. What's the matter, Dick?
Well, what kind of a cigarette did you give me here?
It's just one of those little
things.
Well,
that's not so damn funny, I don't think. Yeah, that makes me sore in the devil.
Why? It couldn't hurt you.
Well, it's not funny, that's all. What are you, a school kid or something?
Well, it's just a little practical joke,
I can't see it. I'm sorry.
Why?
I'll pay for the drinks and get out of here.
No, wait a second.
No.
You're taking the wrong attitude,
I'm sorry.
Dick.
I can't see it.
Well, it couldn't hurt you. Did it hurt you?
How do you know it couldn't hurt me? It might have put my eye out.
Well, it's just a tiny little jar.
Yeah, what you say, what I know. Did
you
make them yourself?
No, I
bought
them.
Where did they come from?
Well, they buy them in a little joke store.
What's the idea? I've never met you before, anyhow. What's the idea of pulling a trick like that on a stranger?
But it's just for a gag.
I just don't like people like you.
This reaction was discouraging, we decided. Could it be that every elbow at the bar has no funny bone? We decided to carry the experiment further and try again. This time our victim was a girl. She was a friend of a friend of ours. We arranged to meet our mutual friend in an office where the candid microphone was hidden. Another exploding cigarette was ready to be offered. The recording that follows shows what a bang she got out of it.
Well, he'll be here in a little while. I guess we'll just have to wait for him.
Okay.
Have a smoke?
Yeah, thanks. Don't mind if I do.
Good. Here's one. Is that your brand?
No, but this is all right.
Good. Did you get a light? Good. I hope he gets here pretty soon.
What is it? What is it?
It's one of those trick cigarettes that go off like, when you light it.
Well, isn't that funny? Gee, I've never had one of those before. Do you have any more?
Did it scare you?
No. I mean, sort of, but it wasn't. Well, what do you put in them?
It's a little plug you put in the cigarette, but I thought it would scare the dickens out of you.
Oh, well, I mean, I was sort of, didn't expect it, but it's, well, I'll be darned. Where do you get them?
Oh, you can buy them in any magic store, but I'm kind of disappointed. I thought it would just lift you right out of your seat.
No, it didn't. It has to be louder than that.
If we were at liberty to give names and addresses, we could have served a very useful purpose with this experiment, because we have discovered a girl who will make some man an amiable and ever-loving wife. She certainly can take a joke. And she's also proved to us that when a practical joke is taken well, the joke is on the joker. We don't mean to get personal or pry into your private financial affairs, but have you ever had occasion to visit a pawn shop? For centuries, these cluttered little establishments under the sign of the three golden balls have made loans on anything from a mousetrap to a mandolin. We peered into a pawn shop the other day, and pretty soon the pawnbroker spied us. He must have thought we wanted to pawn our wire recorder and microphone. He was very cordial as we entered. After a quarter hour of hard bargaining, we got his permission to set up our microphone in his shop to record a typical transaction. We were just about set when a sheepish-looking young man walked in, dropped a watch on the counter, and here's the rest, right from the record.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I'd like to pawn that watch.
How much do you want?
Well, I'd like to get $40 for it.
$40? Well, I'm awful sorry I can't give you $40. Can you use a little less?
How much can you give me?
I'll let you have 20.
20? I've praised it somewhere else and got more than that for it.
How much
do
you offer? How much?
They promised me $25.
$25, huh?
It's a very good watch.
I know it's a good watch. What do you say?
That's a very good watch.
Where'd you get it?
Got it in a very good, reliable jewelry store.
What kind of work do you do?
An elevator operator.
Elevator operator? What, do you play the horses?
No.
What do you do?
Can't afford to play the horses.
What do you need the money for? If I may
ask? I want to get my teeth fixed.
Your teeth fixed?
Yes. I ain't kidding you. You think I'd kid you? You think I want to pawn a good watch like that?
I see you're really honest about it. But still, if you got something else you can pawn, have you got a ring with it? Have you got something else?
That's the only thing I have.
If you got a nice suit, we can lend you the money on the suit, too.
No, that's all I have is the wristwatch.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll let you have $22.
Well, you have to do better than that.
Why?
Think it over. Look the watch over.
No, I couldn't give you no more. Are you sure you're going to have your teeth fixed?
Yes.
Where?
My dentist.
Where's the dentist?
87th Street.
Have you been in the Army?
Yes. Spent 4 years in the Army.
Is that so?
Yes.
Are you married?
Yep, married.
That's so.
Little girl.
That's so. Well, you seem like a nice, honest young man.
Mm.
I'll make it $23, all right?
Can't you do better than that?
No, I couldn't really. Yeah. I really, it's $20, but I don't like to haggle about...
But you're making on it. You must...
I know. The interest is very, very little here. You see, for $23, it'll only cost you...
But I need the money.
It'll only cost you around 60 cents a month. That's cheap enough. I hate to see a fellow walk around without his teeth being fixed. You promise you're going to take it out again?
Yes, I'll take it out as soon as I can. In a couple of weeks.
Okay, step down here. Give him $25.
We left the little pawn shop feeling better about all those articles on sale in the window. If they had all been exchanged for such worthwhile items as new teeth, they had indeed served a good purpose. But we examined our own molars and decided to keep our watch for another 6 months or so. A meal in a good restaurant can be a wonderful experience. You sit down comfortably and put your elbows on a snowy tablecloth. You order and the waiter serves you courteously. And as you devour the steaming dishes, you reflect that some things in life really make it worth living. And you stay in this comfortable sort of coma until the check arrives. Have you ever been jarred from such a reverie by realizing that you didn't have the money to pay? Well, a candid microphone decided to learn what would happen in just such a case. So, emptying our pockets of money, we visited a few restaurants. On the first, the proprietor said, "If you can't pay the check, that's my tough luck." The three other restaurants were equally lenient. We were beginning to believe we had discovered a swell meal ticket. But then we tried a neighborhood bistro. That brought a different story. With the engineer and his wire recorder in one booth and our man with the candid microphone in an adjoining one, we had our usual fine meal. Then we switched on the recorder and called over the manager to give him the sad news. This is a record of what happened.
Are you the proprietor here, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
I want to tell you that you serve a delicious meal. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
But I have a very difficult problem to discuss with you.
Can I help you?
I haven't got a red cent in my pocket.
Did you just find this out, buddy?
Well, I thought I had some money, but when I looked in my pocket, they were absolutely empty.
Well, when did you just look at your pocket?
Right after, well, as soon as I got the check, I looked to see if I had any money, and I find I don't have any money at all.
Well, look now, buddy. I have enough trouble in my own business without having you bust in here, having a meal, and telling me you haven't any money.
Well, I didn't mean any offense. It just happened that way.
Well, you didn't mean any offense, but you're offending. Just had a meal. You were supposed to pay for it. You haven't got the money? You can't raise the money
for it? It's only $1.75.
It doesn't matter. This is a business, just like any other business.
I know, but it could happen to anybody that they'd sit in a restaurant and find out they had no money.
Well, then, can you call someone who would give you reference?
I don't live in New York City.
Do you have any friends in
the
city?
No, I just came here for a visit for the day.
And you have no money on you? Or how do you expect to get back home?
I just don't even know what I'm going to do.
Well, you had no right coming in here and having a meal and not know how you were going to pay for it.
Well, it's true. I didn't have a right to do it, but I...
Well, look here, fella. It's one of two things. Either you get the money up or you work for it.
Well, what could I do?
I have a little cleaning that might...
I don't like that kind of work. Is there anything else you have that you might be able to let me do?
Well, that's what I have in mind right now, and...
How about washing dishes? I'm awful good at that.
Well, you're pretty good at eating and not paying, too, fella.
Well, that's true, but ruin my suit and everything else.
Well, I have something you can change into. We'll see that you don't ruin your suit.
For $1.75.
That's right.
How long will I have to work?
About 2-3 hours, that's all.
2-3 hours? How much do you pay most of the people around here an hour?
About 75 cents an hour.
Well, then I should work 2.5 hours, is that it?
Approximately.
Well, that's really a tough bargain. You can't let me wash the dishes. I could do those really good. I mean, I'd really earn it
Look,
quickly.
Look, fella, I don't want any more talk from you. You go to work or I get a policeman. I want to see this thing through. I have no time for you.
Okay. Where do we go?
You come along with me. I'll show you.
Well, that's the arithmetic of life. One good meal equals $1.75 or 2.5 hours of work in the kitchen. So if you should ever find yourself with a full stomach and an empty pocket, it's quite possible you've eaten yourself into a date with a mop. The average individual passes his life quietly among his friends and his relatives and is never known to the world at large. Is he satisfied with his lot, we wondered? Or is he secretly wishing that he could leave a little mark on the world, if only in the fresh cement of somebody's new sidewalk? The Candid Microphone proposed to find an average individual and give him an opportunity to groom his ego. We couldn't give him anything permanent, like a cabinet post or leading a new picture, but in our own small way, we could give him his little moment of satisfaction, if he wanted it. Now, an easy way to find an average individual is to post yourself outside of a subway entrance. You find a man who's about to take the subway. He's average. So we set up our recorder there and looked over the field. Our girl reporter soon spotted a man who looked entirely satisfied with his average position in society. Pushing her way through the crowd, she hailed him eagerly and asked him,
"Excuse me, sir. May I have your autograph?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Well, I know you. I've seen you in several pictures. I can't think of your name, but please, would you sign it? And I know I've seen you. What's your name?"
"Well, it really doesn't matter. Who do you think I am?"
"Well, I can't think of his name, but I know if you told me your name, I'd know."
"Who do you think I am?"
"I know I've seen you. I'm sorry.
You're making a grave mistake."
"No, you played the part of a gangster. You had a scar on
your face."
"No,
I've never been a gangster. I haven't any scar. I don't..."
"Look, I know I saw you just the other night. You had just a small part, but I've seen you so much. Won't you..."
"What difference
please?
Does it make to you who I am? And if I gave you my autograph, what difference would that make?"
"Because I know I collect autographs. I have a lot of them, and
look,
I know
why don't you run around to some theater and wait at a stage door and just leave me alone?"
"Please, my best friend likes you very much. I know she rode away for your picture and got an autograph."
"You're the one who looks like an actress. If we can sit down for a minute, maybe we can straighten this thing out."
"You don't know me, but I know I've seen
you." "I'll swap with you. Do you live around here?"
That has absolutely nothing to do with it. Won't you please take 2 minutes
I'm
and
sorry. I'm not interested in that. It's very foolish.
It wouldn't mean a thing to you. All you'd have to do is take out a pen and sign it, please, and I'd save them. It means so much to me.
Look, will you please go away? Will you leave me alone? I don't want to sign anything. I don't want to write any autographs. My name doesn't mean anything to you.
I know. If I heard your name, I'd recognize it. What is your name?
It doesn't matter. I'm sorry.
I wish you'd sign it for me. It would just take a minute.
Please, just don't bother me. Look, you're attracting a crowd around here.
Maybe it's you that's attracting the crowd. Maybe someone else recognizes you.
No, I think
please
you're wrong.
Sign
you're
it.
Making quite a mistake.
I'm sure I'm not. Won't you sign it?
Well, all right, if it'll make you happy, I'll put my name down. It doesn't mean anything to you at all.
I'm
there
sure
you are.
It will.
Wait a minute. Let me have your pencil.
Right here.
Okay, there. Now, you've never seen that before.
I know I have.
Well, now I'm sure you're crazy.
We could conclude from this that the average individual prefers to stay average and will consent to being famous only if wheedled into it, preferably by a pretty girl. But we've left ourselves with a final question on this experiment. Now we've got his autograph. What are we going to do with it? Bernard Shaw put it very well. Childhood, he said, is a wonderful thing. What a shame to waste it on children. And it's perfectly true, we think. It takes an adult to really appreciate childhood. A few days ago, we were seized with the desire to recapture some of the unaffected happiness that goes with being a kid. We wanted to hear them playing among themselves without the presence of an adult to put a damper on them. And in this way, we thought some of the happiness of our own childhood might be recalled. Feeling that our candid microphone listeners may occasionally have the same urge, we resolved to do something about it. So we located a likely pair of Moffats, a little girl and a little boy, and with their parents' permission, we hid a microphone in their playroom. The children were then ushered into the room and introduced to a new kitten, after which the adults retired, and the little boy and girl were left alone with the kitten and the microphone. Here's a fragment of the record that was made.
Be careful. This is more fun upstairs, playing pussycat. Oh, no, be careful. Oh, yes, door phones. Jimmy, look at those feet. Moving. Woo! I love it. Be careful. Oh, my God. Cute. Now, let her alone, Jimmy. Walk where she wants to. Stop it now, Jimmy. Get on the side so she can walk around. Yeah, yeah. On the blanket. Yeah. Wait, she can't get off, could she? Well, no, let me tell her. You have to feel. Look at her little tail. Much too rough. My baby on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will fall. And down will come baby, cradle and all.
In thinking over this little recording, it was hard to decide whether we'd rather be one of the children or the kitten. But we finally chose the latter. The kitten, we said, will never have anything to worry about. Something about the atmosphere of a woman's private world that can put a man completely off his trolley. Turn him loose in a beauty shop or in one of those specialty shops that deal in filmy undergarments. The average gent will want to turn turtle and pull his head in his collar. Feeling that a permanent record should be made of such misery, the candid microphone arranged with the proprietor of a specialty shop to set up our record in back of the lingerie counter. The microphone was concealed in a counter display. Then followed a long wait until a man who suited our purpose should arrive. Finally, we had our reward. The poor male came in the door, hesitantly, and shuffled to our lingerie counter with reluctant steps. The guy was obviously sent by his wife. We switched on the recorder and picked up this exchange between the poor devil and the sales girl.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I've got a thing here. My wife wants to exchange it.
too big. She wants a size 24. This is a 26.
May I see it, please?
Yeah.
Well, we don't have this garter belt in this color and the size that you want, but I do have it in a rose and a white. Would you care to see them?
Well, I'm not up on these things. I don't know anything about them. She just wanted to exchange it in size. Do you have another black one?
No, we don't. Sorry.
Well, could you order it?
Oh, I'm afraid that would take from 2 to 4 weeks if you want that. We could.
No, I don't think that would do it. She wanted me to get it today.
Well, wouldn't you like to see the rose and the white? They're the same thing, just different color.
Well, apparently she likes black. I don't know about these things.
Oh, I'm sure she'd like the other ones just as much. They're much more practical for this time of the year, you know.
Why is that?
Well, with black garter belt, you have to wear black lingerie, and with the other ones, well, you don't.
Well, no, she wanted black. I think probably I'd better take this home. If you give me back the black one, I'll take it home.
Well,
let her come in and get it.
Why don't you take the white or the rose home and let her look at those, and then if she doesn't like them, you can always return them.
No, I'm not going to go through this again. Let her do it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
From this experience, we want to issue the following summary, which will be of interest to men only. Women, we say, have shrouded themselves in an atmosphere of silken mystery in order to make a man feel like an ox. And our one hope is to be a thorough ox and stay out at pasture. Then, if the women want us, let them meet us there on our own terms. It's the only way. Morning radio these days offers you the possibilities of having breakfast with a number of famous couples, all of whom are bright and cheerful and bubbling over with wonderful things to say. Listening to this over our own silent breakfast, we grew fearful that the average married couple might well lose their perspective and feel that their marriage was unsuccessful, because they, too, couldn't be cheerful and talky over the morning coffee. To correct this situation, we decided to broadcast a typical awakening in the household of the most happily married couple we know. The practice there, it seems, is for her to hear the alarm and get up immediately. Whereupon she makes the breakfast and then returns to awaken her husband. And therein lies the joker. This husband has a little trouble waking up. He would, as a matter of fact, serve as a good model for a bear being routed out in midwinter. So the other morning, the wife, after making breakfast, went to the front door and admitted the candid microphone with our recording equipment. There was no necessity for concealment. The old man was too far out of this world. She just held the mic and went through the usual routine of trying to get him up.
Tom? Tom, it's time to get up.
Ah.
Darling, the clock rang 15 minutes ago.
All right, honey, I'll be right up. Be right up. Coming up then.
You've got a lot to do today. You're supposed to be in early. Tom? Tom?
Yes, I know.
Come on, darling. You can't keep this up. Yeah. Don't stall any longer.
All right.
Shall I light a cigarette for you?
Yeah, you do that.
Will you remember that it's lit?
Listen, will you please get lost for a minute, please? I'll be right up.
Tom, please. You can't kid around anymore. Watch that cigarette.
All right, I'm up.
The coffee's ready. Tom, coffee's ready.
All right.
Your orange juice is nice and cold.
All right.
Come on, darling, don't kid around, please.
I'm up, honey.
Darling, try to get up, please.
All right, honey, I'm up.
It's late. Well, if you're up, why are you...
All right, listen, I'll be up. Just leave me alone, will you, please?
Every morning. I'm tired of it. Will you please get up?
Will you please go away and lose yourself, honey, please?
Tom. Tom, you're late.
That's all right,
honey. I don't want to have to speak to you again. Will you please get out of bed?
All right, I'm up now.
Well, then open your eyes. Look as though you're alive for a moment, will you?
Will you please look as though you're getting lost for a moment, please? Go away, let me alone, will you?
I think if you take a shower, you'll feel good.
I think if you go get lost, I feel better, honey.
I don't like you talking to me that way. Once and for all, I insist that you get up out of this bed.
All right, Jane, I'm up. I'm awake.
Well, let's see you move.
What time is it, honey?
It's very late. It's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock?
And there's one pertinent point about this situation we'd like to make as follows. If you can love the old boy in spite of his morning meanness, then yours is a great love indeed. Your marriage is held together by blind affection. You have nothing to worry about. And so, for tonight, we put the cover back on our candid microphone. Any resemblance to actual people is not accidental. Although we mention no names, they're all real people who reacted like human beings, never realizing that every word was captured by the candid microphone.
The candid microphone is tailored for your entertainment, and we want to hear your candid comments about it. Write to us in care of the American Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. Next week, ABC's Candid Microphone will bring you, among other things, the conversation of a babysitter and her boyfriend, and the candid recording of a doctor's bedside manner. We hope you'll be listening next Sunday, when we'll be heard again over most of these ABC stations.
Candid Microphone on Tuned to Yesterday from July 13th, 1947 on ABC. And that brings to a close this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.